For seven.
Chaya hankara yorakyam.
Chaya hankara yorakyam.
Tattaya pindavanmatam.
Tattaya pindavanmatam.
Tadahankara tadatmya.
Tadahankara tadatmya. Dehaschetanatamagat.
Chaya ahankara yoho aikyam tapta ayaf pindavat tattayaf pindavat matam tad ahankara tadatmyat dehaha chetanatam agat. So in the previous verse, we were looking at the chaya, this reflection of consciousness that has as though entered into the buddhi. So the buddhi, because of being sattva, as though reflects consciousness or manifests consciousness. And therefore, it itself appears as being conscious, right? Because reflecting consciousness, being sattva, it takes itself to be the conscious being. So having said that, then it says the buddhi vrittis, the thought modifications in the mind, we can divide them really into four categories, but in this verse we're dividing them into two categories. One has one member and the other one has three members, okay? So the one member, the first member of these four categories of thoughts is called the ahankara, ahankriti. Ahankara is the same. That means the I notion. So the ahankara has to do with the type of vritti, the type of thought that identifies my being, the me, with anything that is sattva, anything that reflects consciousness. So if it reflects consciousness, I take that to be myself, right? So the ahankara, which itself is a thought born of ignorance, right, has itself been subject to ignorance that has no access to any type of viveka or any type of discrimination. So any thought, for instance, which is sattva, that is me. As we'll see, even also the body or anything that is pervaded by the sukshma sharira, I'll get into that now, but the subtle body, that, you know, enjoys consciousness, that is me, according to the ahankara, right? And that is something, as we'll see, is kind of in a beginningless relationship. But here what we say, having said, you know, there's these four categories of thought. One category is the ahankara, the other three belong to the second category, and those all have to do, those categories have to do with the different types of thoughts that the mind is capable of having on its own. For instance, my mind, on its own meaning differentiating it from sensory data that's pouring in, from sense perception. Because my mind of its own accord is capable of memory, that's called the citta. Of its own accord, it carries and holds the negative emotions and also the fluctuating indecisive mind that's called the manas. That's another type of thinking that your mind is capable of. And then there's the buddhi, that's the third type. This category of thought has to do with knowledge, with clarity, with conviction, with determination, where I'm able to make it decisive, I'm able to make a decision. So that type of mind, it's that category of thoughts is where knowledge is held, whether it be knowledge just within vyavahara, within the empirical reality that we're experiencing. That type of determinative, knowledge-based conviction, is those type of thoughts are buddhi, or in reference to even self-knowledge, where there's some certainty and clarity, that's the buddhi. Where there's just thought flow, you know, or uncertainty, we use the example for the manas, if I'm walking down the stairs from my apartment, I stop halfway, and I think, did I lock it? Did I lock my door? Did I lock my door? Maybe. I don't know. That's manas. I can't do anything now. I don't know if I locked my door. Okay. The buddhi has to come in and it has to say, you don't know whether you locked your door, so you must go back and check. Or the buddhi comes in and says, no, I clearly remember you locked your door, you can proceed. Right? But the manas is, you know, that indecisive where it's indeterminate, you can't act on it. You know, you can't act, there's no decision to be made because it's fluctuating. Did I not? That's the type of thinking. Also for the manas, we say negative emotions are held in the manas. We'll see later on why it's not positive emotions. Just very briefly, positive emotions require a shantavritti. A shantavritti means a thought modification that enjoys peace. Shanti means peace. So a mind that's not filled with raga dvesha, with likes or dislikes, a mind that is not indeterminate, a mind that is just simple, simply at rest, those types of vrittis bring about ananda. There's an expression of ananda or love or fullness or wholeness in the shantavrittis. Those shantavrittis really are, we say, originate with the anandamaya kosha. This is just technical for some people who know all of this stuff. The anandamaya kosha. The anandamaya kosha is those times when I experience happiness, but I identify with that experience of happiness. I can say, I am so happy, which happens to be your own nature, actually. When you say, I'm so happy, I'm full, I am complete, but I'm only identifying with a mental experience that's brought about by a shantavritti. And so now I'm happy, now I'm happy. Oops, it's going away, it's going away, it's going away. Every shantavritti that you have, vritti, remember, means thought. Every type of thought modification that you have that enjoys kind of clarity and silence and peace, there's a wholeness, a fullness, a sense of well-being in that type of a vritti. And so I can say, now I'm so happy, or I feel so full, or let me always be like this. And let me always be like this, because I resonate so much with that type of a thought modification. I feel whole, and I feel like this is me, this is how I'm supposed to be. But I'm actually, unfortunately, only identifying with a thought modification that in many ways mirrors my own nature. But because it's a thought modification, it comes and goes, as does every thought. And so even though these shantavrittis are so close to my own being, they're more a reflection of my being, in a sense, than of me, the one who's illuminating that reflection. The one who's illuminating the consciousness, the conscious being that's lighting up that reflection, doesn't come and go. If there's a shantavritti, then that shantavritti resonates with my own nature. If there's an ashantavritti, means, you know, an agitated vritti or a hurt vritti, sad thought modification or sad emotion, those don't resonate with me, and I want to resolve them or get rid of them, replace them with that shantavritti. That's natural. I don't think, oh, I'm so happy to be at this miserable vritti. I think, how can I get out of this and get back to my own sense of well-being? But from the standpoint of yourself, your being, who you are, the truth of yourself, you're illumining, lighting up both the shantavrittis, these peaceful vrittis, and the ashantavrittis, the negative vrittis. So the positive emotions are illumined, are known by me, they're known. The negative thought modifications, negative emotions, they're equally known by me. Right? The knownness that they enjoy come from my being. And my being is free of all of them. And so in the end, these positive, peaceful, beautiful experiences that we have, we say take place because there is a shantavritti that gives us the experience of ananda, but we call that experience of ananda an anandamaya kosha. it's like something because of self-ignorance that covers my own nature, because I'm taking myself to be that. So in any case, because of all of this, I can go on and will go on later, hopefully. I can't say that too much because if I have too many of those, we'll never get any. So what I'm saying is that the manas and these types of thoughts that we have, these categories of thought, the manas, the negative emotions are attributed to the manas, where the positive emotions are attributed to the anandamaya kosha or to the shantavrittis, which are just clear, clean vrittis that are not actually doing anything. They're absorbed into a more resolved condition where it's just actually allowing for the expression of my own being in that vritti. So of these four types of thought, we've got the manas, the fluctuating mind, the indecisive mind where the negative emotions are usually placed there. We have the citta, the mind is capable of all of these having memories. And then we have the buddhi, which is determinative, clear thinking, you know, where knowledge is stored. So these are three functions of the antakarna in terms of the content of your mind. Antakarna means mind. So in terms of the content of your mind, we have these three categories. But the ahankara is a little bit different. And that's why in Drikdrisha Viveka it's being separated out, because the ahankara or the ahankriti, right, is always focused on me, on the conscious being, with my own self-experience along with self-ignorance, which causes me to take anything that is in my body, mind, sense organs that is pervaded by sattva, and so reflects consciousness, that chit-chaya reflects consciousness, the ahankara can land on that. I am that. Okay? Because the ahankara is a product of ignorance, right? And the what we call this mutual superimposition, where I take myself to be the body and the quality of the body is to be myself, that all has to do with self-ignorance. The ahankara is the, we would say, the primary expression of self-ignorance, because ahankara means I take myself to be something that I'm experiencing, right? It's an I notion, where any I notion that you have is 50% correct. 50% is that it's actually labeling myself, the conscious being that I am. But it's labeling myself through the lens of my body or of my mind or of my sense organs. And so I'm taking me, which is correct. The me part is correct. But I'm taking me to belong to be a product of the body, or to be a product of the sense organs, or a product of the body-mind complex, or a product of the mind, to belong to the mind. And so therefore, I take on to myself, my being, all the attributes of the body. So my body is born and it dies, and it becomes sick. It goes through all kinds of transformations. Then that means I go through all these transformations. My mind goes through all kinds of moods and emotions, you know. I go through all those moods and emotions because I've taken myself to be one with that. So the beautiful thing is that the me that you are now, that you take yourself to be, I am this, and then I am this, you add on to it a lot of things. But the I am part, me, that is true. That is yourself. This I am part. It's going on saying, I am the body, that part's not true, right? That part's not true. But if I think it's true, then I take on all the qualifications of the body. The I am the me, that is true. That is who I am. I am sad, I am agitated, I am happy temporarily. That's all not true. Those are all false identifications, you know, brought about by self-ignorance, brought about by the existence of sattva, that reflection of consciousness, which my mind takes to be me. So we have to talk more about the reflection of consciousness. And so here it is. Here it says, chaya ahankara yoho aikyam. The aikya, the oneness, the identity between the chaya, the reflection of consciousness, and the ahankara. So chaya ahankara yoho. So between the chaya, the reflection of consciousness, and the ahankara, matam. That is considered by the wise, the people who know the shastra, who have self-knowledge, to be taptayaf pindavat, to be like the red-hot iron ball. Tapta means red-hot. Ayaf is iron. Pinda is ball. So the taptayaf pinda is like the red-hot iron ball. So what it's saying is this relationship between the ahankara and this reflection of consciousness is like that between the red-hot iron ball. We'll talk about that in a minute. Then the second line, it says, tad ahankara tadatmyat. Because of the identity, the tadatmya means identity, because of the taking as one, because of the identity of that ahankara, because of the identifying of that ahankara, tad ahankara means that identity between the ahankara and the chitchaya, and the reflection of consciousness. Because of that, dehaha, the physical body, chaitanatam agat, it gains the status of being conscious, of having consciousness. Chaitana means consciousness. Chaitanatam means that ta affix, so it shows the abstract. It gains the stature, it gains the state of being conscious, right? So I say this physical body is conscious. I am a conscious being, right? So how does that happen? It can only happen, I can only say that this physical body is a conscious being if this physical body is pervaded by sattva. Because sattva, of the sattva, rajas, and tamas, sattva is the only of the three strands that make up maya. Sattva is the only one that manifests or as though reflects consciousness. So this body itself is tamas. It's inert. A dead body is inert, right? So the only reason this body is reflecting consciousness is because something alive is here, is pervading this body. Otherwise, this body is just like the chair or any other, you know, organic, non-conscious entity. So here, we have to look at what we call the difference between this physical body, which is called the stula sharira. Stula means physical or gross. Stula sharira means this physical, the gross, the physical body. This whole universe is called the stula sharira on the total level. Samashti. Samashti stula sharira means the whole physical universe is considered the gross form of this universe. Where the sukshma sharira means subtle body. So the subtle body, this physical body, is viewed as being pervaded by a subtle body. Okay? And so the subtle body, my subtle body, is what transmigrates and takes body after body after body after body based upon karmas. The subtle body, the sukshma sharira, is not subject to death. Subject to change, it goes on, you know, changing its form in the sense of identifying with physical forms that differ from one another, and so it will assume the form of whatever physical form I'm identifying with, but itself being subtle is not subject to birth and death. It's not subject to change in that way. Okay. So that's called the subtle body. So let me tell you what about you transmigrates and takes life that goes from life to life to life to life. And which never experiences death, by the way, you experience change. You know, if I'm transmigrating from one life to another or from one body to another, definitely I will be experiencing change, but I won't be experiencing death. Whereas this physical body will die. But when this physical body dies, that doesn't mean I die. From the standpoint of my own being, consciousness, I'm not bound by time in any way, so this me, the self that you are, never goes through any type of modification at all. But the subtle body based upon your karmas, will transmigrate, and based upon the karmas, take body after body after body after body from beginning of time. So this is what we say transmigrates, what the Upanishads say. There are 19 components that make up your subtle body, the transmigrating entity. The components, some of the components are sattva, and some are rajas. Okay? Samartamas, I'll tell you about that. The sattva components of the subtle body are your five sense organs and your mind. Your mind has these four categories of thought that we've just gone through, the ahankara, the I notion, the chitta, the memory, the buddhi, the intellect, the manas, the fluctuating mind. So there's four. So the antakarna, the mind, has these four elements. We'll count that as four. The five sense organs, your sense of hearing, your sense of touch, your sense of sight, of smell, of taste, of smell. These are your five sense organs. Those are sattva. All of these reflect consciousness. Okay? Consciousness is manifesting them. That's the chit-chaya. Then there's the rajas. There's five elements of the rajas called the karmendriyas, the organs of action. Those have to do with your vak, your speech, the movement of your hands, grasping, the ability of your feet and legs to move, the sexuality, your sexuality, and also your ability to evacuate waste. These are the five, what we call the organs of action, the things externally which your body is capable of doing. Right, so I can speak, I can use my hands, my body, I can use my feet, I can have my sexuality, and I can eliminate waste. So those are five. So now we're up to four aspects of the mind, four types of the thoughts of the mind, five sense organs called jnanendriyas, five karmendriyas, organs of action, and five, which are rajas again, the karmendriyas are rajas, and also the prana. There's five pranas, right? The five pranas, we have the samana, the digestive system, the vyana, the circulatory system, the udana, that which the peristaltic movement that pushes things up for vomiting, for instance, sorry, for vomiting, you know, and also for ejecting the soul. So we have that. And then we have the prana and apana, the ingoing and outgoing, ingoing and outgoing breath. So these five. Sometimes prana is given both the ingoing and outgoing breath for the prana, and the apana again has to do with the opposite of udana, that which pushes down versus that which pushes up. So these are just the vital force, five elements of the vital force. So those five plus the five organs of action, plus the five sense organs, plus the four thoughts of types of categories of thought. Those are the 19 components. Remember, in terms of the four aspects of thought, one is the ahankara that is identifying with everything. I am that, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. Oh, look, I'm transmigrating. I'm transcribing, I'm moving my body and I'm transmigrating. Because it's having that experience, it's labeling it. So now, thinking of these 19 components, it is these 19 components that make up the subtle body that will enliven the physical body. When the karmas are up for this physical body, the prarabdha karma, the karmas that caused you to take this body, when those are exhausted, this body drops, and the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, continues on, will take another body. It may spend some time in different lokas, in different worlds, exhausting karma, but it will eventually come around, either immediately or over time, will come around and take another body, and then go through the same thing from beginningless time. That's the vision of the Upanishads. Now, this being so, if you realize this physical body itself is pervaded by the sukshma sharira, not all of the sukshma sharira is sattva. And so not all of the rajas doesn't reflect consciousness. The sukshma sharira, the sattva of the sukshma sharira reflects consciousness. So now I have to think about that. Let's look at, first of all, your mind, okay? So the mind is sattva, the mind is located and it imbibes in the physical body. Your sense organs, one by one, fill, sense organs will fill all of the physical sense organs. The mind will fill the brain and the heart, actually, they put that whole thing together. Then, the sense of touch. The sense of touch pervades the entire body. The sense of touch is sattva. Pervading that entire body gives consciousness, the experience of consciousness, to the physical body. Remember I told you about my paraplegic friend? The sense of touch, because of that break, right? There was damage to the there was a break there. That sense of touch, which would normally pervade the whole body, only went this far, right? And so this wasn't a conscious being for him in terms of his experience. Only this much was, because this is all the sense of touch could pervade, because the physical component of that sense of touch would be utilizing was broken, okay? So your sense of this body as a conscious being, is because of the sense of touch which is located in the physical body. The fact that my eyes can see is because of the subtle organ of sight that is pervading this physical organ. If the physical organ is broken or damaged, the subtle organ is there, but it can't utilize the physical organ, see? If the brain is damaged, the mind is there, the antikaran is there, but its physical counterpart is damaged, so it can't make use of it. So with all five sense organs, and then also with the prana, with the organs of action, if I lose a hand or something, you know, the pani, that the karmendriya, that organ of action, cannot use the hand anymore because it's not there, you know? So this physical body is a counterpoint, you know, a partner with the subtle body. The only thing is, the physical body is time-bound. It's subject to birth and death. This subtle body makes use of this physical body in order to exhaust its karmas that have caused it to take this particular birth that will take a person from their birth all the way through to their death. And so your life, the life that you've been given in terms of the prarabdha karma, is actually unfolding. You have a position in this universe. This is your place. Where you are right now, this is your place. This is your karma to be here now. And in the next moment, that is your karma to be here now. Because we don't usually think like that or know that, we think we're creating our own karma. Like, I'm here now, but what am I going to do tomorrow? You know? And what am I going to do the day after that? And who's going to make sure that I get the job that I need? Or what I get the life that my life, I get the life that I want? You know? But that's a problem. Because we usually don't want our life. We have our life. We have this beautiful life that is totally taken care of from birth to death. You just sit and be with it and do what is to be done as things unfold and unfold and unfold. You do what is there to be done. And then the things that, and all of the opportunities come. We tend to be highly impatient beings. Yeah. Because the mind works much faster. The mind goes, something's gonna has to happen. When is it gonna happen? When is something, I don't even know what's gonna happen. But something's gotta happen, something's gotta happen. I don't know if it'll happen. What can I do to make it happen? You know, all of this. We have that kind of anxiety. You have the anxiety. But for somebody like Swamiji, for Jnani, you don't have that anxiety. You let Ishwara take care of the life. It's Ishwara's creation. It's Ishwara's life. This life belongs to Ishwara. Let it unfold and see what your life is meant to be. And then enjoy it. Live your life. Kind of if you think of a dream, when you think of the dream characters in the dream can have an ahankara, an ego, you know? They see themselves, each one, as a little conscious being living in the inert world. Little pocket of consciousness working its way through this inert world, trying to figure out what to do, what should I do, how am I going to make it, how am I going to satisfy myself, and how am I going to be a complete being. all of these kind of worries and stresses. But from the standpoint of the dreamer, when you're awake looking at the dream, kind of realize that you are part of a bigger story. And you start to, even from the standpoint of the dream, if you're looking at the dream, you enjoy the freedom or the relaxation of being part of a bigger story, that the whole creation, here in reference to this world, the whole infinite creation that we call Ishwara, is a bigger story in which I am included. So Jnani will look at, one of the self-knowledge will look at it more as, you know, this is my role this time around, which is also kind of nice. This isn't the one and only time. This isn't my one and only chance. This time around, this is my life. And so let me be here and live my life and be part of my life rather than spending all of my time worrying about what's going to become of me, what's around the corner, because we can spend a lot of time worrying about what's around the corner, you know, or worrying about how what happened when I was little screwed me up for the rest of my life, or this separation or this, that, or whatever it happens to be, this hurt, this betrayal that I underwent. If that hadn't happened, maybe I would be a happy person, but because that happened, my life is destroyed. How much time do we spend, you know, worrying about the past, mourning over the past, and then, you know, worried about the future? A great percentage of the life can be spent in that way. Whereas there's another way, but the other way requires a recognition of Ishwara, that this body, mind, sense organs is part of something, an intelligence, a much greater me. This body, mind, sense organs belongs to a bigger picture. And so we all, I think all of us, notice that possibility always in hindsight. You see, oh, there is something. There is some controlling entity. There is some purpose. There is some order to this madness. There is some meaningfulness. I see meaningfulness in the development of my life and why this came in at that time and then this came in and this came in, bringing me to this period in my life. There comes a time where you can trust that looking forward, you know, and kind of enjoy the karmas, the unfoldment of the karmas that will take you all the way through your life. It gives you a certain freedom to really be present. To be present, to be embodied, to be here, you know, and do the best that you can. That's what Swamiji says, I just do the best that I can. Do I do what there is to be done? To the best of my ability. And that's it. And actually, what else can you do? What else can you do is all this, what we call kalpita, and it's all imagination. Once a friend of mine says, I cannot give up my worry because somehow I feel that worrying, you know, if I worry enough, I really, by worrying enough, then it will happen. But if I don't worry, then it may not happen. I have to worry to make it happen. I said, oh, that's really bad. Too bad. So, he's trying to be here. So anyway, here, to give a little background to for you to understand that chit-chaya, that as the reflection of consciousness, pervades even this physical body because of the sense of touch. Right? Remember, the five sense organs are sattva. They by nature manifest consciousness. So wherever they are, you know, there is the sense of consciousness. Now, how do you understand, again, this reflection of consciousness in reference to, let me do this first and then I can go into that. So what he's saying is that between the chaya, the reflection of consciousness, and the ahankara, there is an identity. So why is there an identity there? Because the ahankara is the I notion. The I part of the I notion rests in me, in conscious being, which is the truth, which is the one who is ever present. So if I say I notion, say 50% is correct. That which is landing on my being, which is ever present actually. But then that me that the ahankara lands on also takes onto itself anything that reflects me, because this body is enjoying consciousness. You can't say it's not. It's enjoying consciousness. So this me must be one with this body, because the body is enjoying consciousness. It's having consciousness, even though it's temporary, but nevertheless, as long as it's here, it is having consciousness. And so therefore me, who am the conscious being, and this body which enjoys consciousness. That's the tattaya of Pindavat. Like the red hot iron ball, this body is pervaded by consciousness because of the sattva of the sense of touch, right? And so, since it enjoys consciousness, now the physical body being pervaded by consciousness is just like the red hot iron ball, the iron ball being pervaded by the flames, by the red hot flames. If you don't know iron and you don't know red hot flames, you don't see them as two. And so I don't know, I haven't differentiated, there's no viveka between me, my own nature, the conscious being, and the consciousness which pervades this physical body that we call chit-chaya. Called chit-chaya because the sattva reflects consciousness, and that sattva through the sense of touch pervades this. And so this seems to enjoy consciousness, even though, upon analysis, this body is an object of my knowledge. And so me, the conscious being, is differentiated from it. Still, until that differentiation is done, I realize that this is actually something that I'm aware of. I naturally take myself to be it, because I am a conscious being and this body enjoys consciousness. It is the same with the mind. The ahankara is 50% correct. It enjoys me, the conscious being. It's landed on me correctly as the conscious being. But then the mind is sattva. The mind is illumined. It enjoys consciousness. So this vritti, thought modification, says, I am the mind. Because the mind, reflecting being sattva, reflecting consciousness, is lit up, you know? And so I, being a conscious being, must be the mind, because the mind is enjoying consciousness, even though, upon analysis, when we apply viveka, I recognize that every single thought, every single emotion, every single memory, every single doubt, all of the different categories of the mind are coming and going and are objectified and differentiated from me. But until I do that differentiation, consciousness is consciousness, you know? Sattva reflects consciousness, so my mind is pervaded by consciousness. In terms of my experience, my mind is pervaded in consciousness, so I am the conscious being, my mind is. I am my body. I am my sense organs, because the sense organs also are sattva. They reflect consciousness. And they the knowership, knownness, conscious being then is something which is attributed also to my sense organs. And so why, from the standpoint of the body, mind, sense organs, why would my mind not take my body, mind, sense organs to be me? Because I have never doubted that I am a conscious being, because I am a conscious being. That's the correct part. Right? I've never doubted that I am a conscious being, and my body enjoys consciousness. My mind enjoys consciousness, my sense organs enjoy consciousness, so I am my body, mind, sense organs. Why not? Really, why not? Until we do that viveka, and we start to say, well, you know, actually, the mind that you say enjoys consciousness, right, is actually, it's fine, because of the sense of touch, it enjoys consciousness, but actually the mind is something which I have a subject-object relationship with. Also, by the way, the body is something that has a subject-object relationship. And the dead body certainly doesn't enjoy consciousness. They have a subject-object relationship. It is known to me, all continually changing. It's known to me. How is it known to me? What is my real contact with this physical body? Because I say, it is me. This body is me. But really, what is my relationship with this physical body? I only know about this physical body because of my sense organs. That's my relationship with this physical body. It is known to me through my sense organs. If I remove my eyes, I don't see it. If I remove my ears, I don't hear it. If I remove my sense of taste, I don't taste it. If I remove my sense of smell, I don't smell it. If I remove my sense of touch, I don't feel it. No perception of it whatsoever. Your relationship with the physical body is totally dependent on the functioning of your sense organs. Otherwise, for all practical purposes for you, it does not exist. You have no means of even knowing it. And now what about your sense organs? As long as you have sense organs, you can say, I am my sense organs. I am one with my sense organs. These are conscious. They enjoy consciousness. But in fact, they don't enjoy consciousness really. They enjoy consciousness only when the mind is focused on them. Otherwise, they're just instruments, like a microscope or something. It's just an instrument. It doesn't enjoy consciousness until somebody looks through it. So your eyes don't enjoy consciousness until it's being utilized by the mind. So when the mind is utilizing your eyes, you see. If the mind isn't utilizing your eyes can be sitting here open, but you're not seeing anything at all. You're only with wherever your mind is. So these sense organs, they don't really enjoy consciousness, they're borrowing consciousness. They require my mind to use them. And then I can say, well, my mind really enjoys consciousness. It reflects consciousness, it enjoys consciousness, but does it really? Because actually, the mind itself is illumined, right? It is illumined, it is known, right? So every thought that comes and goes, it comes into every vritti. Just take one vritti at a time, one thought at a time. When that thought is there, it is known. When it's gone, it's gone. Next thought, and when it is there, it is known. So actually, the mind which reflects consciousness itself doesn't have consciousness. Self doesn't have consciousness. It needs the self, consciousness itself, to shine upon it. And then, it lights up. But it's not lit up of its own accord. You think if every vritti itself was made of consciousness, every thought modification is really consciousness. Then, think of this would be really interesting. The thought modification which is coming is saying, I'm coming now, I'm coming now. And the conscious thought modification, I'm coming, okay, I'm here. I'm sorry, I'm leaving, goodbye. Because it enjoys the consciousness itself. It has a consciousness. It doesn't have any consciousness. It reflects consciousness when it is there in my presence, right? But it's lit up, so it takes itself, it enjoys consciousness when it is there to as though reflect me or to feel that I manifest myself in it. But actually, that isn't happening. It just reflects me in the sense that when it is there, it is known, and it as though being sattva, it's like the sun shining in a mirror. I feel my presence, my being, coming into what we call a tadatmya, an identification with that. It's a false identification, but it is identification. And I can say, I am my mind because my mind is a conscious being. I am a conscious being. We have to really do this analysis to see, it seems like that until we analyze it. When we analyze it, we actually realize that the conscious being which all of these things enjoy, is actually absolutely free from all of these things. From the standpoint of these things, like your body, as long as it's pervaded by the sense of touch, you know, your sense organs being pervaded by the subtle sense organs and being utilized by the mind, then we have this, all of this has that sense of consciousness. But, you know, as these things disappear, as these things change, as these things die, they all go away. The sense of consciousness, sense of being itself, remains. Right? It's kind of like it remains without any ripple, because it's the subject is not the object. The luminary is not the illumined. Right? The luminary is not the illumined. When you remove the illumined, the luminary remains the same. When you remove the thing that is enjoying consciousness, nothing happens to consciousness. So one really wonderful experience of this that we have every night, usually if you're a good dreamer, in the morning, you know, if when you wake up, if you've just been, say your alarm goes off and has ruined your dream, woken you up from your dream, what you notice, if you've been interested in noticing it, what you notice is that this dream, and whoever I was identified with in the dream, and the whole dream world, the whole thing disappears. It was so real when I was in it. There was actually all so much going on, so very interesting. I wish it would have continued, but the alarm went off, okay, all the things going on. But when the dream goes, nothing has happened. There's not the slightest change in my being. My mind can make a comment like, oh gosh, I wish that dream would have stayed. And maybe in those really good dreams, have you ever tried to get back into the dream? You know. But that's not the point. The point is, nothing has happened. Nothing has happened to you. You remain just as you are. And not only that, that which has left doesn't, it's as though the whole universe has left and nothing has happened. A whole universe, a whole dream universe with all of the people in it, with all of the cars, with all of the animals, with all of the nature, with the sun, you know, with the ocean, this whole beautiful world is gone. And nothing has happened, because the Sat-Chit, the very being that dream world was enjoying, and the knownness that the dream world enjoys, the very truth of the whole thing, is still there. So the essential nature of the universe, the dream universe, remains. And that's my situation here. The essential nature of all of my experience is never touched by my experience. Because all of the world of experience, even though I take it so to be myself, because of the reflection of consciousness, because of the sattva, I so take it to be me, yet all of these things are continually coming into being and going out of being. There's no part of your body or your mind or your sense organs that is not being reborn second by second, moment by moment, on and on, endlessly being subject to change, subject to coming and going. But for you, you don't have that experience. The experience you have is one of absolute stability, continually blessing this coming and going, so that the coming and going doesn't seem to be coming and going, right? Because I am always the constant. I am always the constant, the truth of the whole thing. And so I don't feel afraid, because actually, you think of it, just think of this moment, right at this minute. It's gone. It's infinitely gone. It can go into an infinite regress because of the change itself. It's infinitely divisible. So any experience that you've had before you can even blink, it's been gone. For billions of blinks, it's already been gone. But we don't experience anything like that, because I am the presence of the present. The presence is never gone. The me is never gone. And so all of this maya, all of this universe is coming and going in the constancy of my being. And at the same time, because of the sattva, because of the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, I am always experiencing myself through the lens of this body, which is going to die, right? And through the lens of my mind, which is going to change, through the lens of my emotions, which are, you know, continually moving from one emotion to the next, to the next, to the next, I experience myself in constant flux, and at the same time, I am present to every experience that I have. So instead of experiencing myself in constant flux as though I'm continually coming and going, how I'll say it is I'm always changing. The I, who is ever present, is always changing from the standpoint of my mind, from the standpoint of my body, from the standpoint of my experiences. But then I'm not saying that I'm always being born and dying. I'm experiencing myself through the lens of all of these changing experiences. The changing experiences are being born and dying, right? Any change, it has a birth and a death. Change means birth and death. So birth and death, change is taking place continually. But I'm ever present there. I'm not changing at all. So I can't say I'm being born and dying all the time. Because every time that I would die, then I'm dead, I'm not here. So I can't say that. I'll say from the lens of the sattva, that which is reflecting my me, is that I'm always changing. I wish I could be more stable. You're not recognizing that you are absolutely stable. You are the one who is ever present to all of this change. That requires that viveka. Because when I recognize that I am never changing, all of this change is taking place in me, I am never changing. Once my mind, the buddhi, recognizes that, then I have a refuge. My own being, which is never changing, it becomes the refuge, you know, the sanctuary for everything that is changing. Especially as you realize your own nature, as we see more and more in meditation, how beautiful your nature is. Very ananda. The wholeness, the beauty, the sanctity, just of the sweetness, just of your being. You know, your being, the sweetness of your being becomes the sanctuary for your mind as it continues to get itself in trouble. You know, it just says, ooh, and it comes home. As it puts your hand in fire, you keep burning your hand, bring it home. Bring it home to the very source of the ananda. You know. So, this chitchaya, and we're going to see it in some different lights here, but this chitchaya, how it's causing this sense of limitation and how to get rid of, in a sense, this identification of the ahankara with this reflection of consciousness. You know, so that the ahankara actually just becomes the aham vritti, where the aham, the word I, actually lands on myself rather than landing upon the reflection of consciousness or the buddhi that reflects consciousness or the body that reflects consciousness. It will continue to do that, as we'll see, but at the same time, I know myself. So that's where we're going in these next couple of verses. Let's stop here.
Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo.